anymore.
Mind and Fitness Podcast. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, November the 21st. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, the best thing that you can do to support the show, actually the second best thing you can do to support the show, is to go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts on your i/Apple device and leave a review if you like what it is that you're hearing, if you like what the messaging is, if you get value out of this. Really, that's a great thing to do. 5-star review, tap write a review. You know what? I also wanted to give a big shout out. So I announced last week on an episode that I am now on Patreon, and Patreon is used to support content creators. There's a couple different pricing tiers that you can use. You can actually get the website on my Facebook page, but I wanted to thank the initial patrons for joining the show. So these are people that have pledged certain amounts to the show to either support it, or in one case, you're actually going to get a couple of bonus shows two per month, where you can send me any Q&A and I'll answer it to the best of my ability. Again, I've spent the last year and a half talking to the best experts in the world on this stuff. So I'm sort of become this vault of knowledge for TMS and chronic pain. So I wanted to thank Kim, Barbara, and Arnie all for throwing some money in the tip jar, if you will, and putting some money towards the show. So again, the whole idea of Patreon is that you have something that you like, or a creation it is that you like. So this could be YouTube shows, musicians, podcasts, things like that. And by putting in some cash into it, you will get some extra benefits. So there's an $8 level, which is more or less going to be like a donation to the show. I like what it is I hear. Eddie, I understand the amount of time that you spend on this, how much the equipment costs, the cost to host it, all that kind of stuff. And you'll certainly get a shout out on any one of these episodes. And then there's the $25 level, which is you'll get a couple of bonus shows per month. And they're only going to be sent out to patrons. So you'll be able to send me Q&A questions and I'll answer them to the best of my ability. The final level is the $75 level, where you'll get a one-on-one session with me. So we'll do a 45-minute one-on-one session. You can ask me anything, essentially, and I'm going to help you to the best of my ability. So today, and I actually did a show on this about 3 weeks ago, but I see it brought up so frequently that I wanted to talk about it again. And that's this whole idea of fear, and fear really being the predominant thing that is most likely holding you back with your symptoms. And this is not going to be the cleanest show, because I started a Facebook thread on this and I got a lot of replies. So I'm going to kind of address them as I go through them. But the premise of it is, are you handling your life and your symptoms as fear-related or love-related? And so what I mean by that, let me give you an example. So one of the things that Steve Ozanich talks about in his book, and I revisited a few sections of his book to get ready for this podcast. One thing that he talks about is the idea of exercising an area of the body that hurts. Let's say that it's my upper back that hurts, which has been, for me, probably my most debilitating symptoms come in the form of the upper back and the neck. And so I would go to physical therapy, chiropractic, all those kind of modalities to try and heal whatever problem it was going on in my upper back. I didn't see any results. And so now, if my upper back hurts, I could go and do some stretches. I could go and do different exercises for it. I could do face pulls. I could do rack pulls. I could do a lot of things to strengthen that area. But if I'm doing it out of fear, meaning I am doing it to get rid of the pain because I'm scared of the pain, that is doing something out of fear. If, however, I am doing those things because I want to get jacked and get big muscles in my upper back, which I do, and any weightlifter wants to have, certainly, then that's doing something out of love, because ultimately I love this part of my back. I want to make it look big. I like the way that it looks when it's big. I think that I look really, really cool when it's big. So that's doing something more out of love. It's not necessarily I'm doing this to get rid of the pain, because that's a fear-based thought. That's a fear-based methodology. And there's a lot of times where I can directly point this back to. And one of them I think about is this dairy allergy that I suddenly have eradicated from, which is great, just before Thanksgiving, because I'm going to be able to eat whatever the hell I want. And for the first time since Thanksgiving of 2012, I will be able to eat anything on the table without having to ask what's in it or having to do that whole annoying thing. It's really been amazing. But in the last few years, I remember I would have just a tablespoon, even a teaspoon of milk. And I would say, okay, I'm going to test this again, thinking the allergy may have gone away. And then I would drink it. But literally, as it's like it's going down my esophagus, I just have this like underlying fear, like what's going to happen, what's going to happen. And then eventually, you just sort of have to let that fear go. And when I let that fear go, it vanished. And there wasn't a problem with it anymore. And like my digestion and all the gastrointestinal problems that I've had for years are completely gone. I won't get into the TMI details, but it's been really pretty pretty darn amazing for sure. And I think about it too with fears of flying. I used to be petrified of flights up until 2010, commercial airlines. And so I would go and I'd take a flight and like my wife would touch my hand and it would be like all clammy and stuff like that. And I remember since then it's gotten so much better. In fact, the flight that we recently took, there was no reaction. I was just looking at the kids and Jenny and that was it. But I remember in 2010, I took this flight to Dallas, and believe it or not, it was icy and like kind of snowy in Dallas, which seems so strange, but it was in January of 2010. And I remember the plane is up in the air and they're giving us those signals that like the plane is going to be land. I was about to say going down, but that's not what I mean. It's getting ready to land. We're going to start descending in the next 15 minutes or whatever. And this is normally the time where I would just start being clammy. My heart would start pounding. I would just I would be so afraid. And then it's almost like I sort of put my hands out to the sides. And I just said to myself, whatever happens, happens. If this plane crashes, I die, whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid at all. And physiologically, I remember that completely changed the way that my body reacted on a commercial airline. It was like that was me sticking my hand in the sand and saying, I'm not going to let this fear override me anymore. So it's something interesting to think about. And I know that for the people listening to this, your symptoms have dominated you for so long, likely, that it's tough to just sort of give up that fear. But the thing is, if you're having back trouble, you're having neck trouble, or you're having any sort of these problems, and they don't go away, so what? Are you going to die? What is there to be afraid of? And again, I understand it's so hard to get over, and we're going to get into that here in a couple of minutes, but a big thing that you can do for yourself, maybe the greatest thing you can do for yourself, is to kick that fear away. So let's get into a couple of the things. So I posted on Facebook. I've seen a lot about fear. Excuse me, God. I've seen a lot about fear written lately. I'll record the podcast today on this very topic, throw some concepts and ideas related to fear. So the first post, I got sick and passed out on stage in front of an audience about 5 years ago. The flare-up I was having at the time, I now know, was TMS. I've always been a super confident musician, but I haven't been playing out nearly as much since that incident because I'm so afraid of it happening again. That's one of the biggies that's really been affecting my life lately. I don't know how that could translate into something for your podcast, but I thought I'd throw it out there. So to the person that wrote this, and she didn't say that it was okay to use her name, so not going to use it yet, but so she's writing about this instance on stage where she passed out performing as a musician 5 years ago. And I think about this thing that happened to me in February of 2011. So before I got into tech sales, before I got into podcasting, I worked for a nonprofit and I would do events. And I remember the biggest event that I'd ever run. There was going to be, I don't know, 500 people there, 400 people there, 600 people there, something like that. I had vendors, I had professional athletes, I had all sorts of people coming to this fundraising event, and it was going to be raising close to $100,000, which was a huge deal. This was in the recession. This was, not a great time. And as time is getting closer to this, I'm getting anxious, but excited anxious that it's about to happen. And then the day before, so it was going to be on a Saturday, and on Friday, suddenly I just get these, I get all these symptoms. And when I look back, I think that this was really an anxiety attack times 20. But it was strange because I had to go and present to a place just like during Friday afternoon. I had to go to present to a Denny's franchise, actually, or a group of franchisees. And I remember being in the car beforehand and just like, I had to throw up like so bad. And I've never had that. I public speak all the time and I find it something that's easy. I find it enjoyable. I find it fun to do public speaking. I would speak at chambers of commerce and rotaries and things like that. And that whole day I was just, it was like really bad flu like symptoms. And I remember I had my teeth were chattering. I remember having the shivers. I would turn the heat way up. I would dress in layers. And I thought like, I'm getting sick before this massive event. Like what is the deal? And I'm petrified about what's going to happen. I stay up pretty much all night. And then I get up at 4 o'clock the next day. I still feel just terrible. And I go through this event and I do my public speaking and it goes off without a hitch. And then literally within 20 minutes of it ending, all the symptoms had vanished. And again, like being up on stage in front of that many people and just like, I'm like wincing internally because I just feel so terrible. And I remember after that, like I did have a little bit of a fear in terms of being able to overcome crowds or overcome public speaking. Truth be told, like I actually haven't done much public speaking or at least a ton of it since then. But the same thing kind of happens during like sales calls, right? If I get over the top nervous or I start having symptoms before a sales call, if I can identify that fear and not be afraid of it anymore, because here's the thing, like if you go on stage and you pass out, like what happened? You didn't die. You could hit your head, I guess, and get a concussion. But if you sign yourself up to do a performance like that again, which I think that you should, and you're not afraid of it, truly kicking the fear away, it just won't happen. You won't have that incident again. So something to think about. Someone else said fear of my symptoms is driving them. I agree. Fear that I will be the one who doesn't get better. I had fibromyalgia for 25 years and TMS from the age of about 13 after the death of my mother. I mean, the symptoms certainly would have started after something like that happened. You talk about the death of your mother happening at 13 and then you had all these symptoms. Like we can see a correlation to that now, but like you're afraid of the fibromyalgia. I used to lay in bed every single day and I would just be terrified to stand up because I knew that as soon as I stood up, all the pain would come back. And I remember even when I was in a bunch of pain, but I was still working out, I was holding onto it for a few months. This was a couple of years ago. And during the workout, I felt fine. I felt healthy. But I just, the whole workout, what's swimming in my mind is I know that as soon as I stop this workout, I'm going to tighten back up. I'm going to tense back up. And I was so afraid of when that workout would end. When all this time looking back, I just think back and I'm like, what was I afraid of? What is there to be afraid of? Fear of not knowing what to do next career-wise. What if I'm not good enough at any one thing? First of all, I would highly doubt that. There's actually somebody else who chimed in and said that was the case with them as well. I don't think that that's the case at all. I think that probably maybe some thought into what are some of the things that you enjoy and some of the things that you're good at that are not for a paycheck right now and seeing if you can apply those things into jobs that do pay. Let me give you an example. I feel that I am tremendous at podcasting, and if you don't think so, that's fine, but I really, really enjoy podcasting. I feel like it's fun, and now with Patreon, it's certainly starting to gauge enough interest to have people paying for it, which is something I you know, that's a hopes and dreams of mine. But what I can relate podcasting to and public speaking is sales, because in sales, I have an opportunity to basically present for an audience, and the audience might be one buyer, or it could be a table of seven executives, which I've done that as well. And you're presenting this thing to them. You're putting on a performance for them. You're solving a problem for them, which in a lot of ways this podcast does. And I hear from people all the time that say that it does. Really, like that's the relation that you need to make. So for the two people who had talked about it being this fear of not being good at something or not being good enough at something to be able to pay the bills, basically, like think about what you're really, really good at that you don't get paid for currently that you could. And I'm not saying to quit your job and then go and do whatever, because I had definitely dreams when I quit my job about a year and a half ago that I was going to be like a fitness consultant. That's what I really wanted to do. A lot more goes into that than what I had thought. And I was still trying to find like the niche. And to me, I certainly feel like TMS coaching for me is a lot better than just fitness coaching and having that be it, which, by the way, I do have pre-done fitness programs that are written that don't require any equipment that I used to sell. If you were ever interested in it, then DM me and we can talk. So somebody else had commented, I think this was Justin, who did give me clearance to bring up his name. I'm filled with fear of my pain, fear of it getting worse and not being able to work, fear of not progressing in my life to be where I want to be. I'm always monitoring my symptoms all day. Is fear really the driving force behind this chronic pain? It absolutely is. It may not have been the driving force behind what started the pain, but it's certainly the driving force behind what is continuing the pain, is the fear around the pain. So if there's certain things that you're not doing right now that you would be doing if you were completely healthy, you need to go and do those things. Steve Ozanich talked about his leg starts hurting. So he's literally like stomping the ground with this leg, and it gets worse and it gets worse, it gets worse, and then it gets better. So like that's the place that you need to get. It's like whatever it is that you're not doing or preventing yourself from doing, you need to do that thing. I remember I used to be so afraid to even like put Zoe on my shoulders because I just thought like it's going to be pinching nerves in my neck and all this bullshit that I had been told for so long. And so I like didn't carry my at the time 2 or 3 year old on my shoulders. You know, we go to like the zoo or something like that, and I wouldn't carry around. Like, how shitty is that to think back on? I just hate the fact that it ruled my life to a point in which I was afraid to do certain things, but that's just the way that it is. And so if that is you, I totally understand. But you've got to stand up to the fear part of it. And I think we're going to get more into that here in a couple of seconds. Somebody else said, this is a very important topic. When I was at the peak of TMS, I would fear going back to an undesirable situation. For example, over the weekend, I was relatively pain-free. And then I would fear going to work where I had to sit at a desk, which would trigger the symptoms. Yeah, I certainly feel that. I call them the Sunday scaries on occasion, where I'm just sort of like dreading work the next day. But the thing is, like, what is there to be afraid of? Like, you're living, you're breathing. And I don't want to necessarily get into the whole gratitude discussion because I have mixed feelings about the overabundance of gratitude, which my girl Caitlin Michaels on the Mind Body Mastery podcast. I think her entire podcast that launched this week is about gratitude. So if you're listening to this, Caitlin, or anybody that listens to Caitlin's podcast, I'm not saying that gratitude is bad. I'm saying that coming from a soul place of all positivity, that might be more negative than it could serve positive. So in any event, the fear of what's going to happen the next day. I would fear going to work where I would have to sit at a desk all day, which would trigger my symptoms. You just can't be afraid of certain things that are going to kick off symptoms, because that's what's feeding this cycle that's going to continue and continue and continue. I think that fear, this is somebody else, I think fear is the root of everything. When we are angry, in my humble opinion, there's a fear underneath the anger. Other than that, I too have a bucket load of fear, so many fears all the time. But again, like, what is it to be afraid of? And by the way, like, I don't necessarily think that it's a fear of things in general, like, you know, a fear of spiders versus a fear of pain. Like, the fear of pain in a lot of ways is kind of what's perpetuating this cycle. Like, repressed emotions is probably what started it, and that's kind of what started this loop. Continuing the loop and throwing gasoline on the fire is this continuous fear over the symptoms and the obsession over the symptoms. Because when you're afraid of something, it's all you can think of. If you're walking down the street and there's a tiger or a guy with a gun, or, you know, you could use a lot of different examples, and you see him out of the corner of your eye and you just keep walking, that is all you are going to be thinking about until you get to safety, like till you get home. What you need to find in chronic pain is safety. And the only way to feel safe is if you can kick the fear. So if you walk by a guy with a gun that's standing in the street and you're trying to get away from him, running away and constantly thinking about it, that's not what's going to get you out of fear. Getting out of fear is just being fearless. And, you know, that guy's not there. And if that guy's there, so what? So what? And I know, again, like, everything I say on here is it's easy for you to say, Eddie. But guys, I was there for a long time being afraid of so much of this stuff. Even after I found Sarno's book and my pain lessened it took a big chunk, 40%, 50%, 60%, something like that. Within a couple of days of reading the book, I still had that large chunk. And when I would have that certain middle part of my back that would seize up, I would be like, I would think about that throughout the day and be afraid of that spot seizing up because I knew how miserable I would feel when it happened. And then there just has to be a time in which you say, if it does, so what? If it doesn't, so what? I'm not afraid of it. I'm going to keep living my life. And then it's just like that grip just goes away. I can feel it right now. the grip is just going away. And it's almost like you get this like tingly feeling. And then you start to move really, really well. And it's tough to describe, but the only way to get there is going to be to get away from the fear, which, you know, for certain people, the people that have the book cure, for them, like this thought of this notion of there's nothing wrong with you and you don't have to be afraid of the symptoms. Like that's what Sarno was saying in all of his books. And for the people that get better by reading the book, that seeped into their subconscious instantly, right? So like most of us are not that way, but for the people that are, that's all that happened is they were able to kick the fear away. It's not that there's anything wrong with you. It just means that you didn't absorb the message as fast. You didn't truly kick out the fear right away. You now became knowledgeable of it, but did you really kick it away? And if you still have symptoms, then no, you did not kick it fully away. So the next one comes from somebody else. Can't mention their name yet either. They said, this just happened in a conversation about business amongst four entrepreneurs. As I'm talking about our thoughts creating our outcomes, one says in defense, what I don't hear is Jesus. All the while, Christian music is playing in the background. I know her personally. She follows a group that I won't mention is against yoga, meditation, mindfulness, energy work. Because they believe it's a sin and it leads to the new age trap. So I focused on protective fear thoughts. She can't hear Jesus in the room. This may not relate to TMS, but it really does. As I'm expanding my online business, I had the worst case of sciatica, 15 weeks, belly bound. It's the fear of this conversation that is giving me a pain in the ass. That's funny. So much so that I stopped for 4 months and just went back to running this week. As soon as she said the bit about pain, I got up and went for a walk. Hashtag winning, totally hashtag winning. So the fear of having this conversation, like that looming conversation, let me give you an example. Situation recently with my wife that upset me. And I had a fear of having a certain conversation about something, finding something upsetting, and I start to get cold symptoms or sick symptoms or allergy symptoms or whatever it is. And once I come to terms with that, I'm not afraid of that conversation happening. Those symptoms are going to go away, and they have gone away in the past. Same thing with my asthma. When I kicked asthma, I used to not do any physical exertion without taking my inhaler. And then one day I just said, I'm not afraid if I run out of breath. So what? I'll have an asthma attack. I've had them in my life. I've survived. I'm fine, whatever. And it was like asthma just went away, which was like, you know, wild, right? And people that have kids that have asthma, like that's so tough to imagine. But there's so much of this. The ingenuity of the mind is really so amazing. And the fact that it can not only bring on these symptoms, but continue these symptoms is something that continues to blow my mind, even after doing this podcast for so long. So this came from, will you cover the message versus distraction topic? So this is really good. This came from Kevin. I think it was yesterday. He was talking on Facebook about this idea of symptoms being a message from our inner child versus a distraction. And what this makes me think about is Adam Heller's book and the way that Adam Heller changed his terminology from TMS to DPS. DPS is diversion pain syndrome. And after I aired the Adam Heller episode, I got quite a few messages from people that think that he's just in it for the money and he can be kind of slimy, and that's sort of how they see him, which is really unfortunate because I don't think that really any of those people know him. And I don't even know him, right, that well. All I know is that conversation that we had. But as I've gone back and read his book and revisited some of the things from his videos and his blogs and things like that, his messaging is very, very similar to a lot of these people that do this. Sarno, Ozanich, Sachs, all this kind of stuff. Dr. Arlene Feinblatt, who her interview is going to air in the next week or couple of weeks. But one thing so Adam Heller's entire premise of diversion pain syndrome is that if you just call it TMS, that's not helping anybody from the onset, which is true. If I were to just tell somebody who has pain, you have TMS, what does that do for them? Tension myoneural syndrome, what does that do for them? It doesn't really do anything for them. It doesn't tell them anything. And they may think, like I thought for the first several weeks, that the tension is referring to like muscle tension, not psychological or emotional tension. So Adam changing it for him to be DPS, diversion pain syndrome. Ooh, diversion pain syndrome. So I have pain and that pain is a diversion. Like just think about how it is that it is said, becomes much more helpful. And so to me, And there's going to be people that will debate on this. Dr. Margaret Chan, who was on last week, talked a lot about the child work, but not necessarily like the inner child work. I interpret more of her work to be around like, what is that message that that is being sent to you? Again, the message of the child versus a distraction. I think that there's just two ways to skin a cat in this case. Because if you think about a distraction, what the pain is that the pain is distracting you from facing what it is that you don't want to face, which is far more what I believe. And that's where I've seen cessation of my symptoms is a distraction. So like, for instance, the dairy allergy being a distraction from the fact that I was about to be a new dad. Like I just found out that we were pregnant, which is when my symptoms came along and all my gastrointestinal problems. And so not being fearful of the symptom then takes the symptom away. So I see more of the distraction. As far as a message from our inner child, it may very well be, and there's a lot of psychoanalytic theory that talks about that. I think that's just how you think of it. But I put a lot of stock in the fact that now I've talked to so many different practitioners, and when I ask them, what is the presence of the people that score high in the ACE study or had this significant childhood trauma that come to your office or come to you with TMS or with chronic pain? And it seems to be about 30% have that predisposition. So for 30% of you, maybe it is a message from the inner child over something seriously traumatic and terrible and all that kind of stuff. But it seems like for many of us, it is not. So I hope that kind of covered it, Kevin. Personally, I see it much more as a distraction. I feel like that's what Sarno is telling us. I think that's what Ozanich is telling us. I think that's what Heller is telling us. I think that's what Sachs is saying as well, because she says that it's really not feeling your feelings and letting that 5-year-old in you have a voice. So I feel like that's very distraction. Again, the distraction of the pain is that you're not giving that petulant child inside of you a voice. And so maybe you could look at it as both. Like the child inside of you is giving you the message, but you don't want to listen to the message, thus you distract yourself with symptoms. So a few different ways to skin a cat, basically. But the next person, I'm struggling with being stuck between the fear of not getting well enough to restart my career and live my life to the full, and on the other hand, the fear of healing soon. I am making progress, and suddenly being faced with getting off disability and taking on all the responsibilities of a normal, single, middle-aged woman's life. I've had it with being stuck home alone in pain and fatigue, but I'm nervous about all the work that it's going to take to get a life and not be dependent on others for financial help and help keeping up my house. I mean, here's the thing. Again, like you walk up, you're on a cliff, you walk up to the edge of that cliff where you see the water. Eventually, like you have to decide, are you going to jump or not? There's a really good Will Smith video that he put on his Instagram page. Go and check it out. But it was dealing with fear. People that were on high diving boards, all this kind of stuff, and they would walk up to the edge of this thing and then back off because they were afraid of it, which is what you're talking about. Like jumping off the high diving board is going back and resuming your life. Like that's the fear that you need to attack. Like that's the fear that you need to just go and confront and be with. And that's what I see. So next one, sometimes it's changeable, typically TMS. My pain is piercing, breathtaking, and frankly terrifying spasm that stops me dead in my tracks, and my fear of the pain goes through the roof. And so then I'm watching and waiting and looking out for the pain because I'll do just about anything to avoid it. So not only do I fear the pain, but I give it every ounce of attention when I think it is close by, when apparently I'm supposed to be ignoring it. I have no idea how to manage this. You know, maybe a way that I would think about it is like I talked about somatic tracking on a recent episode, and somatic tracking, all that it is like say that you have a ball in your stomach, which is one of the things I felt for a long time. If you can imagine that ball in your stomach, and you're just imagining it, like you're visualizing it, basically. You're not trying to get rid of it. You're just seeing that it's there. You're observing it. Very Buddhist in theory. But if you can take it a step further and imagine that ball in your stomach and then not be afraid of that ball in your stomach, and then even take it another step, which Ozanich talks about, and imagining that that ball is actually a perfect flowing tissue in your stomach that looks beautiful and all this kind of stuff. Ozanich used to imagine that he was running on clouds, which is awesome, right? Running on clouds, and his vertebrae are perfectly straight and symmetrical and great cushioning in between all that stuff. Like that's kind of things that can really help the physiology as well. So that's something that I would do. I've had those terrifying, breathtaking spasms. I remember I've told the story so many times on this podcast about when my daughter threw her shoe and I had a neck spasm. That was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. I've dislocated my shoulder. I've broken fingers. I've broken toes. Like, that was miserable. That spasm I got in my neck. And I was so freaked out. I got in the car. I'm driving. I'm stretching my neck. I'm doing all this kind of stuff. Like, I was terrified. So I get what you're saying. My man, Jeremy, for me, fear is directly related to ignorance. Once a belief about TMS becomes actual knowledge, the fear goes away and then the pain follows. The doubt and the lack of deeper knowledge causes the fear that causes the pain. The more I read and listen to, the more knowledge I gain and the less fear I had. You don't turn it on and off. It just happens, just like the boogeyman. It doesn't scare us as adults because of our knowledge about it, meaning the boogeyman, not because we keep powering through extreme fear year after year. It's a great point. So if I, so my daughter, if she were to ever say, I can't go to sleep right now, daddy, because there's a monster in the closet, and I open up the closet, the monster's not there. Like, over time, when she gets old enough, she's going to know that monster just doesn't exist. Like, the monster is not there. So you can get over the fear. This kind of thing happens when kids take the training wheels off a bicycle, right? Like, they're not afraid of that. But if you watch kids that at first get the training wheels off a bicycle and they're learning how to do it and they're about to tip over, like, they're freaked out. They're petrified. Most kids. Not all of them. My neighbors, amazing, those kids, learning how to ride bikes, all of them. It seems like every kid in the neighborhood but my own is so athletically inclined. It's really kind of amazing. But that's I agree with Jeremy, is that letting go of the fear, because the fear is perpetuating the symptoms. In some cases, the knowledge is what is making the fear go away. Some people just need a lot more knowledge, or they need to continually pound that into their brain. It's just each to their own. Everybody's different. This is from somebody else. Fear that it will never go away and that this will be my life despite all the learning, unlearning, therapy, and work. I mean, maybe that's the problem, is the therapy and the work and kind of everything that's being vested into it, when really it just needs to be a, hey, I'm not afraid of this anymore. The person that wrote this has talked to me about IBS and food intolerances, because that's the stuff that I've had in the past, or some of the stuff that I've had in the past. And that's the thing, I just couldn't be afraid of it anymore. And that's like, that's just what ultimately needed to happen in order to get that to go away, was to just not be afraid of it anymore. So that's, I'm going to say it a bazillion times in this podcast, but like, that's where you need to go, and that's what you need to do. Any other ones? Okay, so somebody else. I agree that fear is really the main driver of TMS. For me, it was the fear in the form of expectations about my life. Fear I wasn't good enough. Fear that I'm not thin enough, pretty enough, don't have a respectable career. Fear that I'm too dependent on someone else. Fear of abandonment. Fear of not being liked. Fear of aging. Then with this pain comes the fear of just living. Fear of having run out of time, that I'll never be able to do the things I want. So again, all these things that are perpetuating your pain and causing your pain, they may be causing your pain. As soon as you say, like, that you're not afraid of the pain will go away. And then you still have to deal with the emotional issues. That could be journaling, that could be meditation, that could be therapy, whatever you want it to be. But all these different things that you have, like fear of getting older, and by the way, aging is one of the more common reasons that people even get TMS, is this fear of getting older, fear of being alone, parent dies, fear of not having a parent, losing a job, fear of being jobless, right? So like, for me, having a kid, fear of losing my independence and just being a guy who can sleep until 11 o'clock every Saturday and Sunday. My wife talked about that all the time. That used to be like, NFL Sunday would come on, the games would start at 10. Sometimes we just fall back asleep and wake up at 11:30 again, and the games are halfway over, or the first round of games are halfway over. Like, what a life, right? So I was afraid of that kind of stuff going away. Fear is really achieving nothing but pain. That person finished it off with that. Really, that's what it is. You just have to be able to get rid of the fear. So what's another question that came up? Fear of never getting out of this pain. My pain is chronic for years, and neck fusion did not help and made me worse. So fear that I ruined my surgery too. Fear that maybe I am different and that the one that will not get better from the TMS protocol. And fear of all my TMS symptoms. So that's the thing. Like, you're afraid of all this stuff. You're afraid the neck fusion didn't work. If you go to the TMS wiki If you go to the TMS wiki and you scroll down, not the forum, but the wiki, and you scroll down to the success stories database and you click on back pain, there's a couple of people that wrote really good stories about them having failed surgeries, failed spinal surgeries, and then overcoming them and being completely pain-free. I got a buddy who's my best friend when I was a teenager who had a lamellectomy or something like that, a couple of back surgeries, you know, got on opioids. He's still, you know, worse than he ever was. And I just think like, it's totally that fear. And I, you know, we knew each other as kids and he had a lot of anxiety and that kind of stuff. Like all those things are interchangeable. So you just can't be afraid of it. And again, like it's 2020 hindsight, right? If I could tell myself 2 years ago to not be afraid, when this all started for me, maybe not when it all started, because I had been dealing with knees and sciatica and elbows and stuff like that, but I had come out of my shoulder surgery. I had 4 or 5 months of rehab, but I was so afraid of getting hurt again that when I jumped up and did pull-ups for the first time, that's when my back tensed up and seized and spasmed. And I've never felt something like, again, take my breath away quite like that before. I just got a message. That's what you heard. But it took my breath away. And then I went home. I'm so afraid this, now I just ruined something else. And then like, I think about it for days and days and days. If I, at that moment when my back spasmed, if I could have just honestly, like if I knew about all this work and I could have just stopped and said, there's nothing to be afraid of. Your back's fine. Go home, chill out, take an Epsom bath, that, you know, whatever it is you need to do to unwind. Likely those spasms never would have stuck around, right? And then I let them become chronic, and that chronic state is where no doctors want to treat you because they don't know how to get rid of it. Most of them anyway, almost all of them actually. So that's something else to certainly ponder and think about as well. Guys, this is the end of the show, and so we're just at about 40 minutes or so. But again, I spent a lot of money to get this podcast up and running. All of the equipment, I was thinking I'm probably about $600 deep in equipment at this point, between microphones and the Zoom H4n recorder that I use, the software that I use to edit, the Skype subscriptions, the Skype dollars that are spent for people that are out of the country, but then also the software to host it, publish it, the time spent away from it. So anything that you'd be willing to contribute on Patreon certainly would be helpful. And actually, let me make sure I've got the website right. Do I got it right? I got it right. So if you go to Patreon, that's patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. That's where you can become a patron. So again, $8 a month, what that'll get you is basically a shout out on the podcast, and that you're making a donation. You think that this podcast holds value. It's helped you in some kind of a way. $25, you'll get a couple of extra bonus episodes per month. You'll be put on a mailing list, and basically I'll send out an email asking for questions, soliciting for questions, and I'll answer whatever it is that you want in a podcast that only patrons will be able to hear. And then $75, you'll get a one-on-one with me. And again, like, I've spent so much time talking and to all these experts around the world for so long. I will bring you a vault of knowledge that certainly you can use on your healing path as well. So thank you so much for joining the podcast. If you are in the United States, I wish you the very best Thanksgiving. I am going to eat about 4 bazillion calories, and I just cannot wait for it. So you can like us on Facebook at the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And hopefully we'll be hearing from you all real soon on Patreon. This has been the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Thanks again.